Florida State falls to 3-2 with a 28-22 loss to Miami in Doak Campbell Stadium last night. And Michael, you know, we have had some time to now sleep on this. It is Sunday morning. We're still in the Airbnb here getting ready. We got a long drive home, so we're going to kind of be clear and concise on this. But man, we just wanted to come to you guys and share some thoughts. We actually did an instant reaction last night, but we wanted to kind of just let the emotions die down a little
bit.
Sleep
on it. Yeah.
Yeah, sleep on a little bit. I don't know about you, but I didn't sleep very well because I had some anger dreams or whatever. So this felt like a fever dream, yeah, right? Again, we're here again with this program. So we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the game itself. We're going to talk about some big picture thoughts on the program. I tweeted something out that I'm going to talk about later in the show that did a lot of things.
A lot of engagement.
Got a lot of engagement on social media. So make sure you stay tuned. We're going to talk about that as well. But guys, in this episode, man, there are going to be some hard truths that are going to be addressed. There are going to be, you know, some things that I feel like need to be said. I don't know that a lot of people are going to say these at these times, but man, I think if we have to be the ones to say it, that's fine. It is what it is. And before we get into that, I just do want to say, like, before anyone questions our fandom or our love for this program or anything, like, we both sat in the stadium till the clock hit zero last night and cheering the team on and you know, just giving it our all, and we still love and support this program. This is not out of a place of not loving the program.
Right.
This is coming from a place of loving the program, because sometimes the truth has to be said whenever you feel a certain way about things. So, you know, again, we appreciate you guys joining us. You know, Michael, we talked about this last night. There is a standard at Florida State, and frankly, right now, that standard is not being met, and last night was a big part of that. So let's actually talk about the game itself. Like we said, Florida State falls to Miami 28-22. You are now 3-2 on the season. You only have one Power 5 win to your resume. You can look at this as you probably don't have another ranked team on your schedule, so your at-large bid probably just got torpedoed.
Yep.
Your ACC chances probably just took another torpedo as well, unless absolute chaos happens at the top of the conference. And when you talk about this game, man, there are going to be a lot of people that look at the box score and think a certain way of this game.
Yeah.
This game was nowhere near what the final score said. Yeah. Like, Mario Cristobal is still not a good game day coach, right? And he took his foot off the gas against Notre Dame. They almost came back and lost that game. He took his foot off the gas again at Florida State, and it almost cost him again. It's going to cost them at some point.
At some point, yeah.
It is. But, you know, this game was 28-3 late in the third quarter.
Late.
So this game was pretty much out of hand at that point. So it's just what we're going to get into some stats and stuff. But when you talk about this game overall, man, Florida State got dominated at the line of scrimmage in this game. We got some numbers we'll share in a minute, but again, man, it was just a disappointment, because I feel like when you look at this game coming off of Virginia, this is now 2 weeks in a row that this team made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
They did not look well prepared for this game.
Yeah.
And just a lot of, like, not only shooting yourself in the foot, but you got pushed around on the line of scrimmage now 2 weeks in a row.
That's right.
And keep in mind, you got a really good looking Pitt team that just beat Boston College 48-7 coming to town next week. And Pat Narduzzi always has good trench play. And so, man, you got to really kind of evaluate where you're at. But before we get into some numbers, man, just give me some overall thoughts on what you saw from this game. Because again, like I said, man, for me, the story was, again, the same thing we saw at UVA.
Yeah.
Mistakes, turnovers, self-inflicted wounds, and getting bullied in the trenches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in our Miami preview, I said, Jesse, you know, I thought that Miami would win 28-24.
Good call, by the way.
Thank you very much.
In a bad way.
In a bad way. I didn't want to be.
I booed you for that.
Yeah, I guess I know.
I should have bet for that.
I didn't want to be right. Trust me. But what I felt was I wasn't sure which defense would show up. Was it FSU versus Bama, or was it FSU versus Virginia? And what I walked away thinking was, while yes, they gave up 28 points, they gave up some underneath routes that turned into long gains and touchdowns. They gave up, you know, two bombs over the top. You know, they came in with the game plan, like we talked about, that they had to stop the run. And what they do, they stopped the run. We'll get into those stats. They stopped the run. They did what they needed to do. But there was just some coverage bust. There was just some mistackling, you know, just, you know, they didn't get, you know, we'll get into the stats again, but the pressure number, wait till you hear the pressure, my gosh, number, right? But what I would say is that the defense played a C+, B- game. It was the offense now.
Yep.
The offense just went MIA again, and you had the turnovers again. And so I just am not sure what to expect of this team week to week now. I mean, I think you can safely say, Jesse, the Bama win was a fluke.
Yeah.
I think you can safely say that now. It was a fluke. You caught Bama at the right time, first game of the season, all those things, right? But we've proven now that this team is so inconsistent. That's what I walked away last night thinking, inconsistency.
Yeah, because all we really wanted to see was the team that beat Bama show up again. And I fought it off for a long time saying, oh, well, if they played again, maybe they, you know, they would win and all that, because that's not how it works, right?
Right.
But I think if you ask every Florida State fan to put their mortgage on Florida State over Bama if they played next week, there's not a single one that would do it. And so that's just the truth of the matter. And what's disappointing for me is you see the way Alabama responded to a loss.
Yep.
And this was not a good response from Florida State. It really was not. And so the thing is, when we get into the stats here and you talk about the numbers, this is now two games in a row where Florida State actually won the stat sheet. But again, this is why I always say in our previews, Michael, I don't care about total yards, total defense, total offense. I care about scoring, because at the end of the day, yards don't win games.
That's right. That's right.
And I agree with you. I don't put this on the defense.
Yeah.
I put this game on the offense.
Yep.
You know, we said last week, you score 35 points in regulation at home.
You should win.
You hold Miami to 28 points at home.
You have the number one scoring offense in the country.
Right. It should be enough to win the game. But the problem for me is now I look at it as you go on the road to Virginia last week and your offense put up good numbers against a bad defense. Mm-hmm. Your defense put up bad numbers against a good offense. Well, now you come home this week and your offense looks inept against a pretty good defense. Mm-hmm. And your defense looks inept against a pretty, not inept, but not good enough.
Not firing all cylinders.
They could have done better.
On a basically mediocre offense.
It's pretty mediocre. I mean, they haven't scored over 28 points on a Power Four school this year. And so the problem is, like, you're doing good at beating the not good teams or the not good offenses or not good defenses. But when you're running into the better offenses and defenses, you can't measure up. And that's an indictment on this program of where you're at in year six under Mike Norvell. And when we get into the big picture stuff, we'll talk about that. But I want you guys to keep in mind when we go through this game, we have given Mike Norvell a lot of grace with this program. We forgave him for the 2020 year because of all the things that went into that. You know, 2021, there were some excusable things, but you managed to turn things around. But guys, this is not year three. This is year six, and you are 2 years farther into building your program than Mario Cristobal and the Miami Hurricanes.
Correct.
And so you should not be getting, and I know the box score doesn't look that bad, but embarrassed at home.
Correct.
By that Miami team. Now, I understand they were number three in the country. You were number 18. Maybe you shouldn't have expected to win that game, right? Correct. Because they were technically the better team on paper and on the spread and things like that. Again, you're in year six, they're in year four. It should not be that big of a gap. And so let's talk about some numbers here. Again, you win the stat sheet, right? Florida State puts up 400 yards of total offense, 338 to Miami. So you outgained them. You held them to under 100 rushing yards, 97 total yards, 3 yards per attempt. So like you said, you bottled the run up. You did pretty good. Disappointed in our rushing numbers, only 132 yards rushing, 3.5 yards per rush. That just kind of doesn't really get it done there. Net passing yards, you gave up 241, but you threw for 272. You know, and I think the one thing that we talked about after this game, didn't you say like Tommy threw it 47 times, man. We said in the preview, I said, if you see Tommy throwing it 35 plus times a game, you're in trouble. You're probably going to lose this game. And there was actually a stat I saw where someone said the more he has to throw it, the worse the team's outcome has been. Yep. Right. And so when you see he threw it 47 times, I could have probably told you that was going to be a loss from that. And so, but you did throw for 272, 56% completion percentage to 74. So that wasn't great there. But again, man, you had 29 total first downs to 14. That's pretty good. Some of that was penalty aided. You ran 83 plays. 83. We said we wanted to see you get 75 plus.
Yep.
And they only ran 59 plays, which is crazy. Now, they had a better yards per play number, 5.7 to 4.9. But, man, again, like you won the stat sheet, but you didn't win the game because this team is consistently finding ways to lose games penalties and turnovers and things. And ignore the stat sheet, Michael. Just look at the drive chart. This is Florida State's drive chart. Mm. Field goal, punt, interception, punt, fumble, punt, interception, punt, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Mm. Outside of those last three drives that you scored on, that is ugly. That is ugly. Yeah. I mean, you had as many turnovers just about as you did punts.
Right.
And, you know, when we played the bad teams, we didn't punt for, what, 2 games?
Right.
And so now, again, that's why we say those middle 2 games, they don't matter, no, man. They didn't prove anything. And so just give me some thoughts on the overall stat sheet. And some of that, and what we talked about with the drive chart, and then we'll talk about these pressure numbers. Cause Michael, this is scary stuff.
Scary stuff. Listen, cause we were in the car getting Whataburger and we were waiting in line and
we waited as long as Carson Beck had in the pocket last night.
It felt like, my gosh, felt forever, man.
Buddy could have ate a whole value meal by the time he had pressure.
And peeled each onion off the sandwich. No, but when I was reading the stats to you, we were just like amazed the fact that Florida State, just most of that stat sheet, Florida State. The thing that stuck out was the 3 turnovers and the 14 points that were given up to it. 14 yeah. points that were given up on the turnover. Like that, again, I think the stat has now been, I read to you yesterday, that in the last 2 games, Florida State has 6 turnovers.
Yep.
6.
Yeah. And really, even last night, you had a fumble that you recovered.
That's right.
So that could have been number 7. Like there was a couple of them that you could have lost the other way too.
Exactly. And so you look at this and you would have said, now, again, I think part of the FSU winning the stat sheet is you have to also think that drive chart that you just read, those last 3 touchdowns.
A lot of that came in.
Remember, Mario Cristobal, coaching genius. And I say that very sarcastically. Okay. Took his foot off the gas. Cause if they wanted to, this could have been a blowout.
Yeah,
I mean, it was 28-3 late in the third quarter and there was no hope. I mean, it was a pin drop in the stadium.
People were leaving.
You felt like the team was lifeless. And then of course they turned it on, right? Mario Cristobal doesn't make the correction. I mean, they went for it on 4th down when they could have just kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
Florida State stops them and goes down and scores another touchdown. Like, so you just, I think the stat sheet is a little misleading in that sense and that way. But if you had stopped, let's say about 2 minutes into the third, 2 minutes in the third quarter left, you'd looked at a stat sheet and Miami was pretty much winning most of that stat, except for the rushing. I mean, Florida State defense did what it was supposed to do. One of the keys of the game was to stop the run. They did that. They really did that. I mean, you know, another stat we'll talk about is just the play of Jeremiah Wilson,
you know,
and how he's been. I read a stat to Jesse earlier today when he was Jeremiah Wilson in 12 games at Houston. He only gave up, I think it was like 17 catches, 258 yards, and 2 touchdowns for the whole season. This year alone, in 5 games, Jesse, as Jerry Wilson, he's given up 18 catches for 258 yards and 2 touchdowns. Can we get Jeremiah back, please?
Yeah, we need Jeremiah back quickly. But you're right. A lot of those numbers on the stat sheet probably came in what I would call garbage time at that point.
Yeah.
Again, it's just Mario's coaching blunders allowed you to make this game not look like a blowout. But maybe it wasn't a blowout, but I mean, at one point, the players' body language, you could tell they were kind of defeated. The fans were defeated. And even then, there were some such suspect calls in this game. Like, we're running the ball down 25 points in the fourth quarter or the third quarter. Like, what are we doing? Like, are you not even trying to win the game? Right. And I know you can't just go full air raid and pass the ball every time, but you got to air it out. Right. You know, you got to try and move the ball. And so, I mean, that part I think was definitely disappointing. But like you said, man, if you covered up the logos on this stat sheet, you would have thought Florida State would have won. And so the problem is it was the same way at Virginia last week.
That's
but like we talked about, you are continuing to find ways to lose. So, Michael, let's talk about the most alarming stat of this entire game. Oof. And I'm going to tell you now, I've been watching football for a long time. I've been covering Florida State to where I dig into stats and stuff. This is year 4, I believe, year 4 or 5. So I've been reading these numbers for a long time. Oof. And this is the worst and most lopsided pressure numbers that I have ever seen.
Like, I don't even know.
These numbers that you're about to hear look like a perennial powerhouse program taking on a low-level FCS. It is that bad. So last night we talked about, or in the preview, we talked about how Miami had not given up more than 6 pressures this entire season.
Correct.
Right? Florida State had 19 on Alabama and 15 on Virginia. You only created 6 last night. So, again, you are still struggling to get those pressures. Yep. But here's the story of the game, guys. I don't even want to say it, Michael. This is it feels like a bad word about to come out of my mouth. Florida State gave up 31 pressures.
31.
Michael, I've been talking about the stats and covering this team for about 4 years now. I've never seen a number that high. Never. I don't know that I've ever seen 30. I don't know that I've ever seen really high 20s. That is flat out embarrassing. Like you gave up 31 pressures and you created six. You got dominated on the line of scrimmage without a doubt. And you know, again, Florida State had one place credited you with one sack, one credited you with zero. You had right. one quarterback hurry. But here's the difference of the game, right? Michael, listen to these. This is Florida State versus Miami's pass blocking grades. And now I understand we know PFF, as we always say, it's not the gospel around right. here, but it gives you an indication. So Luke Pettibon was good for you, 85 pass block grade, but it's the center. You're getting right. a lot of double teams there. The rest of your pass block grades, 42.4, 34.5, 22.8, and 18.3. Yeesh. Now, Michael Pettis did get injured in this game. He only played 25 snaps. Jacob Rizzi did not do well when he came in. I think he also had that critical penalty too. But then when you look at – oh, and for the run blocking grades, you had zero run blocking grades over 60 on the offensive line. So you failed to run block as well. We knew that offensive line and defensive line for Miami was good.
Right.
And they made it look
that's
that
Chris
way.
That's Chris Paul's specialty.
Exactly. And so when you look at Miami's pass block grades, again, this is the difference in the game. They had one guard that didn't have a great night. 88.3, 86.0, 85.3, 84.4, 43.7. Mm. Michael, again, I'll throw it back to you on this. I have never seen – in all my years of doing this, numbers that lopsided.
No, I mean, like you said, that is a perennial Power Four program going up against an FCS.
Yeah.
And the fact was, it wasn't an FCS. It was another Power Four program that you did that against. How about this, Jesse? Let me give you one more stat that might just make you cry a little bit. So Florida State garnered six pressures against Miami's offense, right? And Miami had 31. Of those 31, 11 of them were by Reuben Bain. He almost doubled Florida State's pressure alone in this game. We couldn't block him. I mean, he was literally almost unblockable. He was in Tommy's face the entire game.
Yeah.
And this offensive line, which we, I mean, I think we have credible sources, spent a lot of money on.
Yeah.
Right? You went out and got Herb Hand. You went out and handpicked this offensive line. And that's what you – I mean, listen, I think Bama has, you know, a really good defensive line. They didn't get that many pressures on Florida State.
No.
So what happened? What has happened to this offensive line? Virginia was able to get pressure on Florida State in a way. Like, I mean, that's – I don't even know what to say to that.
And I know Alabama did have their starting really, really good defensive tackle out, Tim Keenan.
That's one player.
I do wonder, well, Reuben Bain's only one player. So true. I do wonder how much of a difference that did make in that game. But you're right, man. And this is something that, like, oh gosh, Michael, I hate giving Miami any credit for anything. But credit to Miami. I mean, they dominated you in the trenches.
They did.
But this is something that I've talked about with this team for a long time, even back to the Trouble in the Trenches episode that I did, where, like, for the as much credit as I don't give Mario for being a good coach.
In-game coach.
In-game coach. He built his team from the inside out. He started with the trenches, and he built out to the skill positions. And that's why you've seen them. These are all homegrown guys, homegrown, recruited and developed guys. And most of the transfers come at the skill positions.
Right.
Right. And that's how it should be. That's how Georgia is able to, you know, to go win two national championships with a walk-on quarterback. Right. Because they had dominant trench play. Florida State, for some reason, over the past 10-ish years, or seems like forever, has done the opposite. We have built from the outside in. We always have great skill positions, but you can't match up in the trenches. And so you have five, and I know Michael Pettis was out in this, but I think Jacob Rizzi is too. You have five redshirt seniors who all have experience, and you got dominated up front. And it's just, man, it's that is the story of the game. And so until you fix that, when you run up against teams that have good trench play, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to struggle. And I mean, but you know, even then, like moving on past the trenches, because it's that is the difference. And again, you were right, man. You said trench play matters. That's the one thing you said. And I just wasn't going to pick Miami either way. But I didn't think the disparity would be this bad.
Yeah.
But then the other thing in this game, missed tackles, penalties, turnovers.
Oh my gosh.
Like you said, six turnovers in the past two games. These things are resurfacing week after week now. Yeah. And Tommy had a bad game.
Yeah,
let's face it. And he apologized after the game for his performance. Mike Norvell apologized for the game. Michael, I'm getting tired of hearing apologies after the game. I want to hear, I'm happy we won.
Yeah.
I'm tired of being like, I'm sorry we lost. I'll fix it. Yeah. And then you say the same thing the next week.
Exactly.
Like, apologies only get you so far when you keep doing the same thing over and over. So he missed reads. He was late on a lot of reads. He panicked under pressure. I feel like a lot of times he you know, didn't do well under the pressure.
Yeah.
But my goodness, Michael, you told me he was under pressure, what, 57% of dropbacks?
57.1% of dropbacks.
What do you expect him to do?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you expect him to do? I mean, he had to run for his life on most of the plays. Now, granted, again, he had a bad game.
He did.
But because at one point, I think before the garbage time stuff, he was like 54, 56% completion percentage with no touchdowns and two picks. That's just not good enough, not man. Good enough. And but again, when you're having to run for your life, like I said it during the game, man, when we were talking about it in the stands, I said, thank goodness we have Tommy.
Oh, my gosh.
Because if you'd had DJU back there, you'd have probably had 10 sacks.
10 sacks.
Realistically, if you didn't have a quarterback who could outrun the defense for the most part, you would have never had a chance.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, yeah, he was getting pressured 57.1% of his dropback. So, I mean, he was facing pressure pretty much most of the night. Miami, we'll have to go back and watch the film, but I'm pretty sure about 60% of the time Miami was sending a safety from odd angles that the offensive line maybe didn't read well or didn't pick up. When they finally started to pick it up in the, you know, towards the garbage time, that's when they were able to, you know, move the ball. But not even just that. Okay, let's just set the pressure aside, Jesse.
Yeah.
There were screen passes that went into the dirt.
Yeah.
Why are screen passes going into the dirt? There are short routes that were wide open that could have got a 6, 7, 8 yards. Take the check down. No, he's not taking the check down. He's throwing late over the middle. The play where I don't understand why we're going for it on fourth and eight on their 40-yard line. Terrible decision. Okay. Terrible decision. Play call, perfect though. It was a perfect play call. You had Randy Pittman up the right seam, wide open. And Tommy is late on the read, gives time for the safety to correct himself and get to the interception. You have Squirrel White, who's been I don't know where since the Alabama catch.
He's hiding in a tree somewhere. He's
somewhere getting those nuts.
He's hibernating for the football season.
For the season. But he's on a deep pass there that I don't know why you take that shot when you basically, I think, I can't remember which player it was. I think it was Salchek or one body who's 10 yards down the field, wide open.
Yeah.
Wide open. No one near him. But we're taking the deep shot and we're going to get picked off there. And so it's just, you just look at Tommy and you're just thinking, why are you trying to play hero ball? Take what the defense gives you. If you do that, Florida State is going to move that ball. It's going to move that ball. And on the opening drive, you did that. You took what the defense gave you. I mean, you kind of stalled in the red zone there down in the 5, I believe, and you settled for a field goal. I honestly wish you would have gone for it right there.
Yeah,
but the problem is that he's not taking what the – he feels like he has to play hero ball. And hero ball is costing FSU games.
Yeah, and I mean, it really honestly feels like we have deep shot to deuce.
Yeah.
That's our pass game. That is literally it. And like you said, I mean, Squirrel has been a non-factor. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not going to put this on him because he's a true freshman, but for everything we heard about how great Javon Boggs was preseason, he's been a non-factor.
He's been a non-factor.
Landon Thomas, great tight end for you last year in a bad offense.
Yep.
Non-factor.
Non-factor.
Like you basically have Randy Pittman and Deuce Robinson. Deuce,
that's
and
it.
And that's it. And you know, I want to throw some positive on this. So let me just say one or two more things. Then we'll talk about some positives, right? Because we hate being negative on the show. Yeah. We really do, man. But there's just not a lot of positive you can take from that game last night. But some of the other stuff on the offense, I just don't understand. Like when you're getting beat like that on pressure, we're sitting there in the third quarter and I'm like, do we not have a quick slant in the playbook? And then in the fourth quarter,
we ran a quick slant.
And it was a great, like, why? What are we doing? Like, what are we? You're trying to drop back and throw deep passes when you don't have time to throw instead of running the quick game.
Right.
Hurt them with what they're hurting you with.
And Miami's just playing a too high shell. They're not going to let you beat them deep.
Exactly. So that made no sense. I don't understand some of the personnel decisions that we make. Like, you get a running back who's performing well and he just goes into witness protection program sometimes. Yeah. Like, there's a lot that I don't understand.
And I get chromophoma fumbled. And so now after that, I mean, he was the starter. He started the game.
Yeah.
You know, and then he fumbled and then they just kind of went with running back by rotation. And it's like, okay.
And how are you supposed to build confidence if you fumble one time and you don't come back?
Same thing happened to Cam Davis.
Exactly. And so, you know, I get some of this is on the players and not the coaches, right? They don't coach them to fumble the ball.
Right.
They don't coach them to throw turnovers. They don't coach them to miss blocks. But it's the coach's job to bring in players, develop them, and have them prepared for game day. And we have not looked like a prepared team the last 2 weeks. The game plans have kind of been hit or miss. Some of the execution has been awful. But again, you know, if you want to try and find some positive out of this, Deuce Robinson continues to shine. I mean, he is a pretty darn good receiver from you. I thought you saw some nice runs from Sawchuk last night. That first drive was a thing of beauty. But the problem is, Michael, it seems like we have a rinse and repeat offense. Like, you tried the Danzy reverse a couple times, and Miami knew it was coming.
Oh, they were ready.
It didn't work. So you
now you they ran some wrinkles off that reverse too that I thought was, you know, you had the free flicker off the reverse. They tried that play twice. It worked finally in the second half. You had the double flea flicker off that. You had the double reverse. So they ran some wrinkles that they tried to, you know, kind of skew Miami with.
Yeah, but the problem is when you're having to run trick plays, that means your offense isn't working. And so that's not –
I mean, you just said it.
That's not good.
You
right?
said it, that, yeah.
That's like high school football stuff. Yep. Like, we can't move the ball, so let's run a trick play.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's just crazy, man. But, you know, again, I thought there was some good things out of this with Deuce and with some of the things you saw from the running backs. LaWayne McCoy is getting better throughout the course of the thing there. You know, and
I'll say this real quick. Sorry to interrupt you, but Miami did have – I don't know how they get this. I don't know who they're paying at the ACC scheduling office. Yeah. But they did have 2 weeks to prepare for this offense.
Yeah, and you did get hosed on a number of – like there was a missed pass interference.
Oh, the pass interference that should have been a touchdown.
Should have been a touchdown, right. You that may have changed the momentum of the game because you settle for a field goal, and then you go down and you let them score, and then you're in a 14-3 hole again.
That's right.
Just like you were at Virginia. So – or, you know, it's 14-0 there. But, again, it wasn't all bad,
right?
But I feel like this offense, man, if you slow down the run, and this is Gus Malzahn's offense. This is what it is. Like, this is not a drop-back passing come-from-behind offense. Like, if you can't run the ball on them, you're stuck. You're stuck. It becomes one-dimensional, and it doesn't work well. So that was – you know, again, I think you have some nice pieces on this offense, but, man, if you can't win the line of scrimmage in a Gus Malzahn offense, you're not going to win the game either. And so, again, it's not – all terrible, but it just was not very good at the same time. So I don't know if you saw any positives in this. I'm just trying to give you guys something. I'm trying to give you something. Yeah. I don't want to be completely negative in this, but man, it's hard to find positives. But again, Deuce is a absolute freak athlete.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know what his plans are for the draft or whatever after the season, but boy, if he would come back, that would be huge.
It'd for be so nice.
He is a real weapon.
Yeah.
But man, we talked about it after Virginia game. You have got nothing else from this receiving corps.
No,
nothing. And I've seen nothing. I like your backs. You're running behind an offensive line that couldn't block Miami. So I think you got some bright spots, but man, it's few and far between.
Yeah, I think your bright spots are your back. I think if you can figure out, man, you know, what's been a conundrum is usually Gus Malzahn finds his one to two back and he goes with it.
Yeah.
But we've been running back by committee, and I just don't understand what David Johnson and them are trying to do with that. Like, let's find our two backs, and that's what we're going to stay with.
Let them get in rhythm.
Let's get rhythm. So I do think there's positive there. I agree with you that Deuce has just been, you know, when he's not dropping balls, he has been your go-to. He's your Megatron. I mean, he's the guy you're putting balls up. You know, there were some Miami fans behind us complaining about Florida State not throwing deep, and I kept saying to them, like, when Miami's running a too high shell and they're dropping a safety with a corner over Deuce and then another corner or linebacker in the zone there, it's hard to get the ball to that guy when they know that's who you want to get it to. And the fact
and you have so much pressure, you can't sit back there and wait for him to get downfield.
Exactly. So that was really hard for that. You know, so I think Deuce is a positive. Defensively, again, your game plan, you had to stop the run. And I thought for a team that wants to run it down your throat, that wants to lean on you, Florida State did a fantastic job stopping the run. They made Miami win the game through the air. Now, we knew that you said this in the preview, that you might have to give up a couple big shots, explosive plays, and Florida State gave up a couple explosive plays.
Yeah.
You know, one of them was, I can't remember the receiver's name, but he caught a ball that he got behind the safety because the safety was about 2 yards up than where he normally would be on a regular scheme, right? But where the frustrating part, I know we're talking about positive, but the frustrating part is that you allowed 2 runs underneath. They were 10-yard passes that turned into touchdowns because Tony Tony got the deep ball. Malachi Tony got the deep ball, but then he got an underneath route that then he turned into a touchdown. So outside of that, you stopped the run, right? You did make Carson Beck get off his launching thing. I said that was a key.
Yeah.
Even though you only got six pressures, you did were able to kind of move him around. You held them to under 30 points, yeah, which we said if you could hold them under 30 points, it gives you a great chance to win the game, right? And then, of course, you got stops when you needed to. Miami punted six times in the game,
yeah,
okay? So I think those are positives there. I mean, Jake Weinbar made a field goal there, so he did all right. You know, I think punting was really good in this game. So there's some positive for sure. And I know you're probably laughing right now. We're talking about, oh, punting was good. That's great. So there's some positives. It's just that when you look at the totality of this game, you walk away not feeling better about the trajectory of this team.
No, definitely not. And let's talk about the defense, because again, I thought they had a pretty decent day against not a stellar offense.
Right.
But again, I think you are past a lot of the really good offenses on your schedule. So you would hope that you can kind of repeat some of this against some of those teams. You know, again, it was much better than last week, but that's why I said I thought Virginia's offense was better than Miami's, right, at least from how aggressive they play. But, you know, yeah, I think you held them under 100 yards at what we say 3.0 yards, yep, per rush. So you did pretty good there. The defense played significantly better.
Yeah, yeah.
You just struggled to really get pressure and get to Carson Beck, which was the problem. You know, you got saved on the one deep pass with, yep, the penalty. You got burnt there. So, you know, I think when I talk about the defense, and not to jump back on the negative side, man, but when you look at the last 2 weeks against decent quarterbacks. Now, Ty Simpson is obviously like a Heisman-level quarterback, mm-hmm, right now.
Yeah.
It was his first start on the road in a loud environment. Maybe that had a lot to do with it. But Carson Beck had a 71.4% completion percentage and four touchdowns passing. Last week at Virginia, Chandler Moore, 74.3% completion percentage, 276 total yards, five total touchdowns. So, like, what does that tell you about the defense when you're giving up 70-plus percent completion, mm-hmm, percentages week after week? It tells you that your secondary, mm-hmm, is not affecting the pass,
correct,
and you're also letting them sit back there and pick you apart. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that's bad for you. And in case you were wondering, like I said, Chandler Morris, 74.3% completion percentage, 276 total yards, five total touchdowns against us last week. Mm. They went to overtime against Louisville yesterday,
yes,
they won. He had a 61.3% ooh, completion percentage, 176 total yards, and one total touchdown against Louisville's defense. So again, man, that tells you that Chandler Morris is a good quarterback.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a little bit to do with your defense, yep, too. So that's tough. I know that was, what, on the road versus home,
right,
I think it was. But still, man, that's a very large disparity between the stats.
And I think, too, like, and we talked about this during the game. Like, I called out that one touchdown play, right? Because basically what was happening is Miami was running a tight stack, you know, with three wide receiver, well, really, two wide receivers and a tight end and then a running back. It's called the power four. And they were running that. And Florida State was playing 10 yards off. And I kept saying, why are we playing so far off? We're giving them the first down every time.
Same thing we did against Virginia.
Same thing as Virginia. And sure enough, Miami, the last touchdown they got, Miami ran the same power four stack, right, up to the right side. Tony kind of comes out. He's wide open, 7 yards down the field. He gets the ball and he's off to the races. Because that's the defense we were running. Why are we running that? I get it's a 3-3-5, but can we play 3-3-5 man? Right?
Yeah.
Can we play 3-3-5 stack? Like, can we man up a little bit there? It's killing us. Now, I know last year we complained about Adam Fuller's man defense, but my gosh.
Told you at one point in the game last night, I missed Adam Fuller because at least he would man up, put his DBs on an island, yeah, and make you beat them.
Make you beat them over the top. And so it's just frustrating when you look at the scheme. Now, again, the defense played better than they played against Virginia. But there are these little small moments in the game,
yeah,
that you look back and the totality of it costs you the game.
There's a lot of nuances to it. And one of the things I think that's most disappointing to me is when you look at this defense, we knew we had some problem in the trenches, right? But we felt very good about where our defensive back room is. You know, right, we feel great about Patrick Surtain and all that type of stuff, right, man. But you miss so many tackles in the secondary that turn short passes into big gains. You got outrun last night, yep, in the secondary, yep, on multiple occasions. Like, do all these blue chip DBs we have,
but
we can't run with a freshman wide receiver?
They look slow against Miami.
It was so once you see a team that has athletes like you do, you start, yep, to see the cracks in the foundation.
Right.
So that was disappointing, man. But I think we'll wrap up the game thoughts and go into some overall thoughts, which is going to kind of be the spicier part of the show here. But again, it was just a disappointing performance against a rival at home. You would have thought this team would have played much better than they did when you talk about that.
Right.
But let's go over to the flip side of this and let's talk about some big picture thoughts. And I want to start with the tweet that I posted out last night that got crazy interaction on social media. And I tweeted this about 28-3 in the third, late in the third quarter, I think it was. I said I was going to wait till after the game, but and they almost made me look dumb because they were coming on the comeback. Thank you, Mario Cristobal. But I tweeted that because I was like, the game's over at this point. So I said, I hate to go scorched earth, but it might seriously be time for a change. Year six under Mike Norvell with zero top 10 classes in recruiting, 1-9 in the last 10 ACC games, 7 straight ACC losses, 3 losing seasons in 5 years, losing record versus the rivals now. The Bama win doesn't matter anymore. Right. That's out the window. Like, and then I said at the end, tell me I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, and some people think I am wrong, tell me why.
Yeah.
Tell me why. Yeah. Because, again, I think when you look at the overall, the 1,000-foot view of this, that Alabama win looks like the outlier versus what we've seen normally. And so at the same time, it's starting to look like 2022 and 2023 were the aberration, not the normal.
Right.
And, you know, you had a lot of players that were really good players that they hit on in the portal. They struck gold. A lot of them came back for 2023. That's how that team got so good. But this comes back to a lot of where you, how you recruit. And we'll talk about that in just a second. You don't build a solid foundation. So it, you don't have stability from year to year. But, you know, some of the rebuttals, I just want to go through a couple of them here that people were talking about when they say, oh, well, you're wrong with what you said. And I'm not calling for Mike Norvell's job. Maybe I am a little bit. Maybe I am a little bit. And I understand the buyouts there. And we'll talk about that later. But I think you have to question where you're at, right? And some of the rebuttals are, we don't have the NIL Miami does to get those types of players. Michael, do we not have better NIL than Virginia?
Yes, we do.
We lost to Boston College last year.
We
lost to Wake Forest in 2022. These teams that you're losing to, if Mike Norvell had not lost to Virginia and you lost to Miami, I could have been like, you know what, man, they're a better team than you this year.
Right.
It's the fact that people are looking past the Virginia loss too. Like, you're losing. I had told you last night in the 247 talent composite, you are third in the ACC. Virginia is 15th. 15th. And you're losing to that team. There's no excuse for that. And then another one. It's a rebuilding year and year one under the new staff who doesn't have their players yet. Well, here's the thing. First off, why are we in a rebuild in year six? That should be a red flag in its own right. Right. And so then half the starters, to the other part of that question, half of these starters are from the portal. This is the quarterback. They want it.
They want it.
This is the running back.
They want it.
This is the offensive line. They went out and got
it. These are the receivers. They want it.
Exactly. These are their guys. And even then, from the offensive perspective, we already have talked about how Mike Norvell's offense is basically built from the Malzahn tree.
Right.
You should have had the pieces to competently run this offense when he got here. And then the other thing, well, we fought hard. Congratulations. Hang the banner. We fought hard against Miami. Like, it was 28-3 late in the third when Miami took his foot off the gas because, again, Cristobal's not a good game day coach. Man, when I look at that, I look at Florida State and I say, you either accept mediocrity or you become Nebraska. And at some point, you have to say, this is not good enough. And it seems like, and I don't mean this is disrespectful to our fans or listeners or anybody out there, but it seems like part of our fan base has forgotten what this program is about. They have forgotten the standard that was set. And we're going to share some numbers that are going to drive this home here in just a minute. But you have forgotten how this program was built. It was built on championships. It was built on winning games, not on playing hard and that type of stuff. So, man, we don't take moral victories at this program. And so we're not striving to lose close or play hard or be a middling ACC team and maybe we beat Virginia. No, you want to be the Ohio States, the Georgias, the Alabamas of the college football world. You're not trying to be the Virginias, the NC States and all that. And that's no disrespect to them, but you're just on a different level. You're in the hotbed of recruiting in the country in Florida. This program has made significant investments building the football only facility, renovating Doak, all the NIL stuff that they've done. I just, again, I don't mean it disrespectfully, but there's a portion of the fan base that seems to forget why Florida State is the program that it is.
Yeah.
And you should never, never accept anything less than that.
No, no, you shouldn't.
And Mike, Mike Norvell says himself,
he says,
the standard is the standard. You said it yourself and you're not meeting it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, you know, I think there might be a portion of the fan base, and again, no disrespect, you know, we're Noles, so we need to stick together. But I do think there's, Jesse, a portion of the fan base that grew up, you know, in an era where they didn't see a lot of success.
Yeah.
And that's all they know of Florida State. And so they think that, oh, this is normal. This is not normal. You and I grew up watching national championships. We've both been to a national championship.
Making a good bowl game is not good enough.
That's not good enough. We grew up where 10 wins was like the standard. Like you just thought, oh yeah, we're gonna win 10 games every year. We're gonna be in the national conversation every year. We're gonna have a Heisman Trophy contender every year. We're gonna have a defense that's knocking people out, sending people to hospitals, not to be harmed, but just, you know, just a little nicks, right?
Get checked out, right? Concussion protocol.
Exactly. Like, that's what we were used to. And even in the lost decade, you know, the 10 years where Bowden was kind of coming to the end of his time here. Even then, you there was a standard that Bobby said we're not meeting.
You never had a losing season.
You had one season where you went 7-6. That's it, right? Jimbo comes along and you start winning again. And he goes 8 years. Now, let me give you – can I give you a stat? Are you ready for this stat?
Let's go for it.
You ready for this stat? Okay. Now – When Florida State joined the ACC in 1992, okay, it took 13 years for them to lose 9 games. 13 years to lose 9 games.
That's incredible.
In the ACC. Bobby was 101-9 in his first 110 games, okay?
That's crazy.
Jimbo Fisher comes along. Jimbo goes 48-16. He only averaged 2 ACC losses per year, but really you have to like quantify, like there was, you know, he went undefeated back-to-back years in the ACC there, right? Mike Norvell is 20-22 in the ACC, right? He's averaging four ACC loss a season. Obviously, he has the aberration of one season where they went undefeated. Here's this: Florida State has lost the last 9 ACC out of their 10 games. It took 13 years to lose 9 back then. Yeah. So when we talk about the standard, just the ACC alone, this is not meeting the standard, Jesse.
Right, and I don't expect you to build a dynasty like Bobby had. I don't, because times are different. And I understand NIL, the portal, things are different. I understand that argument. But again, man, you said, 101-9 in your first – we're 1-9 in the last 10 ACC games. That is not the standard, guys. It's just not. And even when you talk about Jimbo – you know, when he first took over and before he became head coach, he had that kind of down season the first year because he was getting his players. Right. They had not recruited super well towards the end of Bobby's time.
A down season was 10-4.
Right. But then, you know, again, like you said, man, he had 16 ACC losses in 8 years. Mike is at 22-5 1/3, basically. And even then, to further along that, Mike Norvell also has delivered the first FCS loss in program history, the first loss to Duke in program history. This is not.
Oh, the worst season in program history.
The worst season in program history. This is just not the standard. And the thing is, man, I just want to say this. We like Mike Norvell.
Yes.
We want Mike Norvell to see the succeed. The best thing for Florida State is for Mike Norvell to succeed, so you don't have to pay that buyout. We have defended him for years. But at some point, results have to matter. College football is a results-based business. I love what he does off the field. I love the way he manages the program. That's great. But he's not a guidance counselor. Mm-hmm. He's a football coach. Mm-hmm. And wins and losses are what determine your success. And right now, the numbers just aren't where they need to be. And so I think at some point, and you can also tie that back to recruiting. You have not signed a top 10 class since you've been here. You did not sign one coming off a 10-win season. You did not sign one coming off a 13-win season. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Miami signed 2 of them before they even won 10 games. Correct. Under Cristobal. Billy Napier, who's not even a good coach and kind of a weird, you know, weird dude there at Florida or whatever. And he's even out recruiting you. And so again, man, it's the recruiting that's the problem that goes on top. Because we were talking about this last night. You know, if you had maybe one arm or the other, I don't even know where you would feel, because if you recruited well and you had bad results, well, then it'd be a damnation on Mike Norvell, right?
As a coach.
As a coach. But if you won without the talent, you'd be like, okay, he's just a great coach. He just can't recruit.
Correct.
The problem is right now we can't recruit well, and we're also not winning consistently either. So where are you at with this? And even then, being a CEO head coach, and you're still making bonehead decisions going for it on fourth down, you know, and just not looking prepared and stuff like that. So I think at some point you have to stop making excuses.
Yeah.
You have to. You have to call a spade and tell it like it is. And remove your emotions. And of course, we're emotionally tied to this program because we're fans, but you have to remove the emotions and just look at the raw numbers. I mean, let's be real, Michael. the buyout is the only reason he hasn't been fired yet, if we're being completely honest. And I understand that. I understand that buyout is a real deal. But if you keep allowing this, donations, attendance, support, all that is going to falter.
Yep.
And then at what point is, you know, the short-term pain worth the long-term gain of moving on? Now, you don't know who you're going to get next and who's going to be better,
right,
if they would be better. But, you know, some of my final thoughts on this is, man, first off, you fired Willie Taggart after 21 games because you said it looked like in game 21 what it looked like in game one.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, we're 3-2 with one Power 4 win.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like in year six what it looked like in at least year two.
Year two.
Right?
Because we give grace for year
one. Yeah, I don't count the 2020 season. Taggart got fired for less, right? And so, man, at the end of the day, I say this, right? I love this program. I will always support this program, of course. But I am a fan. This logo on your chest, this logo on my chest, we are fans of Florida State University, not Mike Norvell State University. I don't care who the head coach is as long as they're winning, right? Yeah. I don't care. There was a time when Jimbo had to go. Love him to death. God rest his soul. There was a time at the end where Bobby had to go because the results just weren't what you were up to the standard that he set himself. The same with Jimbo. And so, man, I just look at when you look at the raw data and the numbers and you remove the emotions, this program is so much bigger than any one coach or any one player. And if you're not getting the job done, you have to question where you're at with that, right? You have to look yourself, if you're a Florida State fan and you're okay with this, you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, am I okay with being a fan of a mediocre program? Or do I want the program back that we saw compete for championships just 10 years ago,
just
10, 12 years ago, right? And so, man, that's the hard part. Because I'll be honest with you, Michael, as a fan, I'm growing tired of this. Mm-hmm. I'm growing tired of losing. I'm tired of the inconsistency. You know, we were joking about this last night. Like, we had a great time at the tailgate and all that type of stuff before the game. But it can't be like our friends say over at Virginia Tech. The game can't be fun up until kickoff, and then that's the worst part of the experience.
Plant the spear, and then you're like, ugh.
Exactly. And so, like, man, it's just – this is a results-based business, and the results are not meeting the standard. And it is what it is, right? And maybe they bounce back, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they respond to this. Maybe it is kind of that rebuilding year. Maybe you go beat Pitt and you reel off a bunch of wins and you end up going 9-3, 8-4. If you can see that, you are a very optimistic fan. I will give you that.
Yeah.
If you lose to Pitt next week, who again just throttled a bad Boston College team, but if you lose to Pitt at home, I think you're really – this is going to come true, right? And I hope this video looks dumb later in life.
Nice.
Right? I do hope that happens, but I think you have to question, especially if you lose that game, where you're at. And then to take it one step further, man, is like when you look at that, I think even if you put together an 8-4, 7-5 season type of that, because I don't think Mike Norvell is going to get fired anything below 7-5 or without being below 7-5. Man, next year, you better win 10 games. Oh, you better compete for an ACC championship or the playoffs. Or I think that's not good enough, man. We can't be, maybe 8-4 is good enough in a reset year in year six, but 8-4 is not good enough in year seven when you had the chance to overhaul your staff and bring in players. So the standard is the standard, man. And right now it's not being met.
Well, I just think, you know, at the beginning of the season, during the summer, we said 8-4 was probably the ceiling for this team. And we said that you had to hit that ceiling just because of what you came off of. And anything below that, you know, would put you in the limelight of potential being let go, right? That seat's hot again, right? And so you beat Bama, a top 10 team, and you beat them handily. And so it changed our perspective. We rose the ceiling. We thought, man, we might have a playoff contender here.
Yeah.
We thought this and we thought that. Then you had two cupcake games that in some false kind of way reinforced that ceiling being raised, right?
Yep.
You, as you like to say, we started drinking that Kool-Aid
a lot.
I mean, we were chucking it.
Yeah, we did.
And then Virginia brought you back down, but you thought, okay, you know what? Maybe they're looking forward to Miami. Maybe some of this, you know, kind of suspect here. But then I think the Miami game, if you watched it on TV or you were in that stadium and you watched the entirety of the game, I think reality hits you dead square in the eyes. Like,
the
ceiling is an 8-4 team. So we're back at that again. We're saying this is an 8-4 team. Okay. Now, I say all that to say this, Jesse. We are in year six at Florida State, a perennial powerhouse program that's younger than any other perennial powerhouse programs in the country.
Which tells you the standard.
Which tells you the standard.
Right.
Won 3 national titles, 16 ACC championships, a ton of All-American first-round draft picks, 3 Heisman Trophy winners. I mean, we can keep going, right? Okay, right? We're in year 6, and we're saying, we can win 8 games. That'd be nice.
That's a problem. That's a red flag.
That's a red flag.
Yeah.
And again, make sure you hear us, me and Jesse. We're not calling for Mike to be fired right now.
I'm just a little bit, but no, I'm just kidding. I do think you should at least at a minimum see how the rest of the season
plays out. That's right. I think he deserves the rest of this season. And I think if he gets to that, you know, 8 win mark, I mean, I don't want to even say 7. If he gets to the 8 win mark, I think, you know, you go in next year and you're saying, all right, 8 wins, got to get to 10 next year. I think it's anything below 8 wins this season, I think you have to have a very serious conversation. If it's 6 wins or less, there shouldn't be a conversation. You know what that needs to happen.
Yep.
But we should not be sitting here in year 6. Man, if this was year 4, I'd be a little bit more gracious.
Yep.
100%. But this is year 6.
Yep.
This is year 6 of this now. I think at this point in time, you have to say, as you say, Jesse, this is a results-based business. This is not about good feelings and moral victories and playing hard and oh, look, they finished the best they could. No, this is about W's and L's. At the end of the day, you're paid $10 million to get more W's than you get L's.
Amen to that.
Right? And so at the end of the season, you have to evaluate this. Michael Alford, President McCullough, yep. Like you have to evaluate. Is this okay? Is the W's and L's okay based on what you are expending for this coach? And again, I really, really like Mike Norvell. I really want Mike Norvell to succeed here. I really do. I'm going to pull for this team every single game, as I always done since I was a little child, right? But at the end of the day, the standard is the standard.
Yeah.
And if we accept mediocrity, that's what you get.
Yeah. And I'll just say this. I think regardless of how the season turns out, if he does make it another year, I think there needs to be some conversations in private. I don't think this should be public because you don't want to ruin any recruiting momentum or anything like that, which we don't have a whole lot of anyway. But I think there needs to be a private conversation between Michael Alford and Mike Norvell. And you tell him next year you are coaching for your job. Mm-hmm. And this is the bar that needs to be reached or you will not have a job. Mm-hmm. Point blank, period. Mm-hmm. And here's the honest truth, guys. Like if you're paying $10 million a year and you made the investments that you made, Michael, there are a host. We was talking about with someone this on comments of that post I made. There are a host of coaches that would throw Mike Norvell out of his office to have that job immediately. So the people like who you're going to get that's going to be better, I don't know that they would be better, right? You don't want to get into the Miami and the Florida issue over the past 10 years where you get in this cycle of hiring, firing, because they don't work. So you have to, and remember, Mike Norvell is not a Michael Alford hire, so mm-hmm. he may be looking to want to put his stamp on the program because right now it's not looking good for, you know, hit for his results.
His tenure.
Yeah. His tenure, yes. And so there are a lot of coaches that would come in here. So I think it's not like you would have to settle for who would take the job.
Yeah.
Not with the investment that they made, not with that new football-only facility. You would have a lot of people fighting to take this job. And so that is the truth of the matter, man. And, you know, we did drink the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. That Kool-Aid made my stomach upset last night, Mike, when I think I threw it all up behind Doak last night because it was just a disgusting performance. But again, man, you're 3-2 and only 1 Power 4 win on the season.
Yeah.
And that Power 4 win looks like an aberration at this point. Yeah. So just hear us say as we go to close this episode out, man, I really, really want this to work. I really, really want Florida State to bounce back and win 8-9 games. Maybe you can even somehow go 10-2. Who knows? Maybe that gut check came against Virginia at a bad time because you just ran into a buzzsaw that was Miami. You just took a brick to the face because they were just a better team. But at the same time, I talked about this after the Virginia game. You can't let one loss turn into two. But if you lose that Miami game, because you very well could, because it could just be the better team, you can't let that turn into 3 losses. Right. You know, you go lose to Pitt, and I wonder where the psyche of this team is going to be after that. So you have to bounce back next week.
Yep.
Have to do it. And we're cheering for that to happen. We're still going to be going to games, still going to be doing all that stuff. But, man, you got to bounce back.
Yep.
And right now.
Yeah.
But the last thing I'll say, Michael, is we did have some fun at the tailgate yesterday.
It's a great time.
Really appreciate everybody who came out and visited with us. We got to hang out with some great friends, some great people. Again, really, really appreciate you guys for coming out and showing support. That was fun. What a crazy day in college football. Florida beats Texas. UCLA beats Penn State. Like, it's just, it's wild.
Bama struggled with Vandy. Bama struggled with
Vandy. Like, what an insane day of college football. And we were hoping that we would be part of the insanity, and then we were not. But yeah, man, we had a great time. So again, I hate to be depressing and downers in this episode, but man, 2 weeks in a row, it's we have been digging for the needle in the haystack of positivity.
Yeah.
And it's just hard, man. But if you guys enjoy this episode, man, drop a like and subscribe. Again, we were just talking about it. We're going to try and get our hands on the All 22, maybe do a film review on this so we can look up, you know, a little bit more of what happened in this game to break down for you guys. Of course, we're going to be previewing Pitt next week and all that stuff. So stay with us, stick with us. You know, we're fans, man. We feel like we can come on the show. We're an independent outlet. You know, there's not like they can take our access because we don't have it. So we can share the emotional disappointment with you guys as fans. We can also call it like we see it because we have that liberty. And so that's what we want to do. We want to be positive about the program we love, but we owe it to you guys to be real about what we're seeing. And right now that reality is this is not up to the standard. So, you know, we'd love to have you guys lock in with us with a like and subscribe, a rate and review on the podcast. Also, if you want to join the membership for the channel, it's only $5 a month. We would love to have you guys as a member. It's how we do all these things like the tailgates. You know, some people have tailgates and they charge exorbitant amounts of money for tickets. Ours are all free. And you know, we take care of you guys. We have food, drinks, all that type of stuff, entertainment, all that stuff at these. They're completely free for everybody. We don't even take donations for that. But how you can help us continue to do these things is through a like and subscribe, is through following us on social media, is through joining the membership, joining the PTS tribe for $5 a month. So if you're interested, check that out. So Michael, any final thoughts before we get out of here? You know, it's funny, we were talking about it. We're in the Airbnb. This is the same table I sat at for Boston College last year in 2024. So this is like the table of depression over here. I'm ready to stop sitting here talking about losses, but man, any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
You know, well, I'll just say this. Like, I believe in this team. I believe in this coaching staff. I believe they can turn this around. I believe it every single year. You know, that belief is waning. And we have to see the results on the field. Now, you got to come out and you've got to beat Pitt. I'll say this too. You know, when we were doing our preseason W's and L's, you know, we talked about the fact that if you can come 3-0, if you can come 4-0 into that Miami game, and let's say you lose that Miami game, you still have a lot of momentum there.
Yeah.
What you couldn't do was lose to Virginia, because then Virginia could topple into losing to Miami. Well, that's the exact scenario that happened, right? You beat Bama, which we didn't think would happen.
Right.
But then you lost to Virginia, and then you lost to Miami. So you've got to pick yourself back up. You got to come out. You got to hit hard. You got to hit first. You got to hit all day against Pitt. You cannot let Pitt beat you. Do not let this turn into three straight losses. I believe they'll be able to do that. I think as of right now, they're going to be able to bounce back and they're going to be able to beat Pitt. Now, obviously, we'll watch the film. We'll see how the Pitt game goes. But I have confidence that they'll come back to Doak Campbell Stadium next Saturday and they'll get that W, get to 4-2 on the season. And then we'll start to see where the rest of the season goes.
Yeah. And one thing I did want to touch on that sucks about last night, over 100 recruits saw that.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, they saw a great environment. They did. Doak, I'm sure.
Incredible environment.
But kids want to win, right? And I heard someone on another, I don't know where I heard it, but said something about maybe the win-loss is overrated in that, and they just like the environment, the NIL and stuff like that. I don't know, man, because
win-loss do matter.
Win-losses do matter. That's why people are still going to the top name programs. Right. And again, that's why you see with Mario, like early in their tenure, they struggled to win, but they recruited well. So now you're seeing that recruiting and development pay off.
That's right.
And we're just not seeing that with Florida State. You know, we talked about this before where how many guys have you seen developed at a high level from the staff so far? Josh Farmer, maybe.
Right, maybe.
Everything else has been a transfer. And so, man, you got – my last thought on my whole Mike Norvell situation is you're seeing right now – I said this last night. If you had a scale and one side was red flags and one side was green flags, right now the red flags are highly outweighing the green flags, right? Yeah. But you got to bounce back, man. Again, you beat Pitt, which is going to be easier said than done with the way they played. But you beat them at home. You feel good about that. That trip to Stanford, you should win. It's tricky. Obviously, Penn State just lost to an 1-4 UCLA team.
Yeah.
But if you can win that game, that's two. You get a bye week. Then you get Wake Forest at home. That could be three wins right there. Obviously, you're going to have a tough test there up at Clemson because we thought you'd roll over that game. But now it's going to look a little bit tougher, right? Then you got a Virginia Tech team that struggled and you should win at NC State and at Florida. So you know, I feel pretty good about you getting to like six, maybe seven, but getting past, you know, eight to nine is you're going to have to play better than you have
played better.
You're going to have to play better. So guys, again, we're always going to cheer for Florida State. We're always going to love this program. I'm going to wear Garnet and Gold on the way home. I don't care. It's still you down. I don't, you know, I still don't love those guys. It's still go Noles, man. We just want to see it look better. We just want to see the product look better. I'm tired of walking. You know, I think I said it the other day. I've been to four or five Florida State games in the last two years. And right now I think I'm 1-3 or 1-4. Mm. It's just a disappointment, man. Yeah. It's just a disappointment. Like when Jimbo was here, maybe Jimbo could use a job. He was in Tallahassee yesterday. Just saying. I'll buy the first Christmas tree. First Christmas tree's on me. But when you talk about it, man, you used to walk into Doak and you'd be like, I feel like it's not if we're going to win, it's how bad we're going to win, right? And so now we're sitting here questioning whether we can beat Pitt next week, and that's just not it, man. So, but we love Florida State. We're going to continue to support this program, and we appreciate you guys continuing to support us. So that's going to do it for this episode, guys. We will catch you on the next one. And again, 12-0 or 0-12, Michael. It is always go Noles. So appreciate you guys watching, and we'll catch you on.